Hi, my name is Gordon Sinclair. I am known as Thistleweb in the IRC. This episode of Hacker Public Radio is a look at how current copyright thinking affects musicians. We're going to take it from the perspective of starting a band, about getting together with a group of people, starting a band and getting organised, and just how many different places copyright comes in and forces you to either cough up a lot of cash just to do very mundane things, or forces you to break the law, break copyright law. And basically, so it's taking you from that perspective, because a lot of people don't really think about what it's like from the creator's point of view. In this case, it's the creator of music. They see it from the end user's perspective, the audience member, the fan, the listener, the watcher, the reader, whatever. So we'll take it in phases. So the first phase is you've got say a group of four or five people, and you're on IRC and you're kind of getting to know each other. You know each other as names on IRC. You figured out that you're all reasonably local, that you could get together quite regularly, and you figured out that you're all musicians, and if you can find some common interest and overlaps and influences and styles and tunes and all that, then you could possibly do something. So we'll take it from that perspective. So you're in IRC, you're chatting away, and you're trying to get a handle on who likes what and who wants to do what. This is just a discussion phase. So all of this really comes down to, have you heard this song? What do you think of this song? And say, for example, I'm saying, right, I want to do Dreamer's Ball by Queen. Then I say that in IRC, and then if the guys come back and say, well, I know Queen, but never heard Dreamer's Ball. Maybe I have, I just don't know the name of it. So here's the first stumbling block with copyright law or copyright thinking, is I'm forced to either say to them, right, okay, you're going to have to go to iTunes or go to Amazon or something, and go and buy a copy of Dreamer's Ball, just so that you can play it once, and then get the reaction of, I do actually recognise that one. I didn't know the name of it. Now I know. I'm not that keen on doing that one. Or alternatively, that's what it is. Yeah, I like that. We could do that. But so you can either the alternative to that is you can do it illegally. You can do it with breaking copyright law. By you can either say, I'll send everyone the MP3, do a file transfer, or I'll email it to you, or point to a torrent file that has that in it, or put it up on like Rapid Share or something, file dump program, or put it up on my website, go and download it from there. Or you could say, right, we'll find it on YouTube, find the music video or something on YouTube, or a live version or something on YouTube. But of course, all of these, the recording industry are hell-bent on removing. There is no fair use. They're determined to block all of that, so that the only option open to you, the one they expect you to do, is buy these songs. So they expect the four other guys that I'm talking to all to buy that copy of that song, just so that they can hear it to jog their memories in this discussion. And bear in mind, this is only one tune, one song in many, many, many that we're talking about in this discussion. This is a back and forth between all five of us. with all of us saying, "Oh, have you heard this tune? What about this tune? I would like to do this tune." And it does mean that all of us are going to be scrambling around trying to find our own CDs and trying to find various ways to hear these tunes. And the current copyright means that most ways it will be illegal. It'll be against copyright law. So that's the first phase. And bear in mind, we've not even met in person yet. This is a band that's hopefully about to make music, and we've not even met in person yet. And we're already either extremely out of pocket just to have the conversation, or we're criminals just by having the conversation. So, assuming we get to the phase where we've agreed that on, say, 10 tunes that we can all do, 10 tunes like, from all different artists and bands. So we've agreed on that, and we say, right, okay, we'll get together and we'll sit and listen to them from the musician's sort of perspective. Because musicians, first of all, musicians are influenced to play an instrument. They're motivated to learn to play an instrument because they hear a song or multiple songs or a band, an artist, a musician, and they think, "I want to be able to do that." And it takes an awful lot of dedication to decide that, I could go to the pub tonight, or I could spend a couple of hours struggling away on the guitar, learning to change chords more than like three chords a minute, knowing that by the end of it, my hands are going to hurt like hell, and I'm still not going to be able to play anything even remotely recognisable. But I would rather do that to better myself, to get further along the path of being able to play that instrument. And that takes motivation. That's because you heard someone else playing that instrument, and you want to be able to do that. So the musicians hear things with a different ear to regular fans. Musicians are able to, because they are focusing on their own instrument, it's sort of like seeing behind the curtain in The Wizard of Oz, and seeing how things work, and sort of demystifying it. And when you can break a song down to from something that appears magical when you listen to it, and then you get a bit of an understanding, and you find that it's a three chord sequence. It's an E, an A, and a G or something, it's and once that kind of demystifies it, you start to be able to hear that when you're listening to music. And musicians tend to be able to focus on different instruments as well, and like follow the bass line, for example, through a song, and or follow the arrangements of when an acoustic guitar comes in for a fill or something, or there's some little offbeat timing change that turns a mundane tune into something quite funky. Well, musicians hear that. Musicians spot that. So the second phase would be the people, the five of us getting together in someone's house. This is before we've got our instruments out yet. And we're getting together, and we're all listening together to the tunes that we've agreed to do. But we're all it's this is a more technical thing. It's working out how we're going to do them, what key they're in, potential things, comparing these songs to our own abilities, and sort of saying, well, look, when it comes from that intro into that bridge, there's a funky little fill in there that I probably won't be able to play, but I should be able to get something close to it, because you've kind of got an idea that instead of just listening to it, you're now acting as a student and saying, I'm going to have to play that. So you're then looking at it, deconstructing it audibly to know where you're going to have to work on it. So there's that. And of course, everybody's got together with their CDs and things because, you know, that might spur out and get more tunes that we agree on. You know, have you heard this? Put that on, whatever. So once we get to that stage, we're then saying, right, okay, we've kind of got an idea what we're expected to do now, what we've all agreed that we want to try and do now. The next part is about getting a source copy. So you this is again, if you haven't already bought a copy each, like five copies of each of these tunes from, you know, Amazon or iTunes or whatever, legally you'd be expected to do that. The copyright holders would want you to do that. Or if you don't buy them as individual songs, hey, go out and buy the albums. And remember, they were still at the stage where none of us have even got our instruments out yet. So the other alternative is what would realistically happen is saying, well, you know what, just create one compilation and we'll burn five CDs, we'll burn one for each of us so that we can take it away. And at that point, the music, each of us would use that in our own way. It might be easier to like rip it into the computer and put the files onto an MP3 player or onto the phone or something, so that we can listen to it when we're on our way to work or college or something, and just listen to them over and over and over again till we really know these tunes and really get them into our heads. But of course, that's the next part. Of course, the copyright people, that would be against the law. You know, the copyright cartels don't want anything even remotely resembling fair use to be enshrined in any law anywhere. It's vague enough as it is, and then there's all sorts of lobbying pressure and bills and you know, all that kind of stuff to ensure that even that is destroyed. So already we're criminals before we've even picked up an instrument yet. Already we're criminals. And bear in mind, these are the same people that tell you that all these rules, they're working on behalf of the artists, and we're already criminals before we've even started because of these rules. So we get to the stage where we've now burned a copy of a compilation CD of source material to work from, source songs. So if we're doing Dreamer's Ball, that would be one of the 10 tunes that we've all now got a copy of. So that's only the listening material to learn it. Now we've actually got to have some source of music that we can learn from. So musicians learn music from all sorts of places. It can be anything from an informal thing when you're in someone's house and there's another musician there and they're just mucking about on the guitar or whatever, and they suddenly start playing something that you recognize, and you thought, oh, how do you play that? And all of a sudden, whatever else is going on in that house, you completely forget about. You're totally in student mode. It's like a flip of a switch, a one to a zero, if you like. It's just straight into student mode, and all your attention is on the person that's emanating this knowledge, and you are the sponge determined to pick up that knowledge, to absorb it. So I've been there. I've been there when, as a student, I've been there. It's just completely informal, as I said. I've been there where I've spotted someone doing that, and I've went into student mode, and I've had it happen to me as well, where I've just been sitting mucking about, And all of a sudden, I've got somebody's sort of turned me into a teacher. I've been there. And I think all musicians have these types of moments where it's just completely off the cuff and it happens. So you've got that. And the tunes, it might be, where did they learn these tunes? Are they Did they pick them out by ear? Did they sit and listen to the CD or the MP3 over and over and over again to learn it? Did they get taught it by someone else? Is what they're playing right? Is it accurate? Is it in the right key? What the chord changes? Are those the proper chords? Are those the proper voicings for the chords? Does it matter, really? I mean, as Nuno Bettencourt says, he is kind of reluctant to show people how he plays the tunes, like extreme tunes, because he wants people to listen and interpret and play them in their own way, rather than teaching them his way. And every musician's an individual anyway, so that kind of makes sense. So you've got people teaching each other on an informal basis, which may or may not be all that accurate. And you've also got, it's like passing on knowledge, essentially. Or you've got something called, well, music books or music sort of teaching stuff. You've got websites that offer tab music, and this is by people who transcribe, musicians who transcribe tunes and put them up, and these are brilliant. They really are. Where you can go and search for a song or an artist, and you can search each of the different sites, and you might find like six different versions of the same song, and they're all slightly different. It might be just the chords on one, it might be just the solo in another one might be in a different key, or so between them you can get pretty accurate in a lot of cases, and at least it gives you something to start from. Or the official way to do it, which would be the way that the rights holders would want you to do it, would be to go and buy music books. Now, for the uninitiated, music books are they can come as compilations. If I wanted to get, we'll go back to the Dreamer's Ball for example. If I wanted to do a Dreamer's Ball, and or if we'd agreed, we've agreed to do Dreamer's Ball. So we say, right, we need that source, and I'll look at my local books music store and see, well, there's a Queen's Greatest Hits there. It's like $30. A lot of tunes in it, but it's like $30, and it's a piano version. There's no guitar chords. It's all transcribed for the piano, and the tunes are all like one piano plays the sort of composite of the whole tune, rather than just the piano parts to the tune. And it's got the lyrics, obviously. I mean, the lyrics we can get almost anywhere. But at least we've got the chords. If we do it that way, at least we've got the chords. And then one of the other guys says, "Well, I've found a Dreamer's Ball in a busker's handbook, and a busker's is essentially it's easy chords. It's very much simplified. Busker's chords tend to stick to majors, minors, sevenths, minor sevenths." Fifths, and a few others, a lot of open chords and a lot of bar chords, but they're not necessarily that accurate, and they're also arranged for like one guitar. They're arranged to be easy to memorize, easy to play, and easy to just throw into the repertoire. So that's not necessarily that accurate, and maybe in a different key as well. And then one of the other guys says, "Well, I've been checking about and I've found a Queen's Greatest Hits that has actually got the guitar tab in it, But you can't buy it in Britain. It's only available in America, and the company, the website that does it, won't even ship to Britain because they're not allowed to. Even if you pay the postage, you're not allowed to. They just won't sell it because the publishers of the book have put some restriction on it that say we only want to sell to Americans or to people living in America or Canada. And that, well, what you know, I mean, that leaves that forces them to say, right, okay, we need to contact our mate in Wisconsin or something and send the money to him and get him to go to his local guitar store and or get him to order it from the website that you could do yourself and get it, you know, transfer the money across and convert it and it's just nuts. It's absolutely nuts. So, and what the end result of that would be, after spending all that time and conversion and postal money and postal time, and eventually you get it, and that's one copy of that book. Now, bear in mind, they might only be wanting one song from this. All that time and expense, and they might only want one song from this. But that's one copy. Now, this is like this is a teaching resource. This is something that we all want to use more or less at the same time, so that we can all in our own time say, right, I've got these 10 tunes to learn. Right, I'm going to put aside an hour tonight, and I'm going to work on I'm working on this tune and trying to nail this and get that right. So we cannot. It doesn't work like some fiction book where what the guy that buys it will then work and learn the tune and then say to the next bloke, right, here you are. I'll loan you the book so that you can learn it. The point is, we all need to have access to that at the same time to be able to learn it at the same time, so that by the time we get together with our instruments to actually have a go and see, as a first attempt to see what we're going to sound like, that we've all got at least something to work from. So that brings us again, what do we do? Are we expected to order five copies of this same book? Seriously? Are we expected to do that? Just the copyright cartel would want you to do that because it's all for the artists after all. That's what they're all about, allegedly, is it's all for the artists. So without doing that, what's your alternative? Well, you've got the book, we're only wanting the one tune from it. So we photocopy the 7 or 8 pages or whatever it is that it makes up Dreamer's Ball. We make five copies of that, and we each have a copy of the photocopy. And again, we can apply that to each of the 10 tunes that we're doing from different artists and different bands. So we've broken the law already by by making compilation CDs, by photocopying from tab books, you know, from checking out stuff, or from people. Oh, we'll get in fact, we'll get to that. So this is just at the very start. Now we get to the phase where we're learning our tunes, we're getting together reasonably regularly, and we're getting a bit tighter musically, and we're actually starting to produce something that we could then start taking and playing at gigs in front of an audience. And again, depending on where you are, what counts as an audience, because the rights holders want money per performance. If you play half a song, do you pay half the royalties? If you play an instrumental version of the song that doesn't have the vocal on it, do you pay a reduced rate? If the song breaks down after the first verse, is that a discounted rate? You know, I mean, obviously these are ridiculous examples, but it's the sort of mindset that the rights holders are the exposes what the rights holders seem to think is perfectly logical. So we're playing in various pubs. Now again, pubs and clubs and that need to be licensed to be able to play live music. So again, the rights holders are the getting their pound of flesh. So again, that's stuff that the pubs pay for, but you still have to play in these licensed venues. So you record your sets, and then you decide, right, we need to promote ourselves. And obviously the thing on the internet would be things like set up a YouTube channel, set up a Facebook page, your own website, MySpace, Twitter feeds, and hopefully a lot of free software versions of that Identica and Diaspora when it gets going and stuff. But for all of that, you're playing cover versions. So do you need to license these tunes from the rights holders? Would you have to go and pay money to EMI, who own the copyrights on Queen's back catalogue? Well, I assume they still do. Do you have to go to be able to put up your a copy of you and your band playing Dreamer's Ball at your local pub on YouTube? Do you have to pay EMI legally to be able to put that clip up on YouTube, or to be able to put that recording on your website to allow people to stream it or download it? Even though it's you playing it, it's still not written by you. Or do you, I mean, in some cases, if you're doing, for example, Prince, Prince just, he is notorious for just refusing any of that. He won't give permission for anything, for his stuff to be used anywhere at all. I mean, it would get ridiculous if you wanted to start doing Prince stuff, because I mean he was one of the first to go nuts at YouTube and get absolutely everything, even remotely connected to him, removed. You won't find any Prince stuff on any of the video hosting sites, for that reason. So again, I mean, there was a clip about some, I think it was the parent had filmed their baby bouncing in a chair, and the music that happened to be on was a Prince tune in the background. It was playing on the stereo. The baby was bouncing about to the beat of the music, and having a ball. And mum thought that would be a great thing. I think it was mum. Mum thought that would be a great thing and put it on YouTube. And well, Prince didn't seem to agree. And they got a DMCA request for that to be taken down. So that's how ridiculous it is. So with your own website, if initially all you're doing is covers, because I mean, any time when a band is getting together, when people are getting together to play music, or to see if they've got some chemistry and some common ground, it's always, or who are your influences? And if you say, oh, I'm Uncle Jimmy, who's that? The only person who knows that is you. And, well, unless you happen to be related to Jimmy Page, or, it happens. But, so, it's all household names. It's names that you can recognise. Anytime, I mean, just look at descriptions on new bands coming out. Oh, we're a hybrid between, we've got the sort of heavy side of Limp Bizkit, and we do, the political side of the Beastie Boys, and there's a blend of that and, whatever, But everything is a description of a bit of this, a bit of that, with this part of someone else. You can only do that if you have recognisable names to fill into those slots, to give people an idea of who you are. So for that, and even, I mean, even the bands and the artists who write their own stuff, they never do that right off the bat. They always start with covers always, always, always start with covers, because it's easier to say, right, do you know, Just by Radiohead? And it's at least you've got point of reference to be able to say, yes, I do know that, and I've got the tune to work from. It's already written, you don't have to work anything out, and you don't have to teach anyone one of your songs that only you've heard in your head. And again, for the student's point of view, you're not the one who's trying to get a grip on a tune that someone else is trying to teach you, that you have no reference point to go on. So it's only for a while every band does covers until they start to, excuse me, until they start to find their own style and their own blend, their own chemistry. At that point, they can then some of them then start writing their own stuff and start introducing their own music into their sets, or their own versions of covers that are significantly different from the original. You know, that they're original in the fact that they're very different from the original. So up until that point, you're starting off and your set is almost all based on covers. And at that point, you've got your own website, your own Facebook page, your own YouTube channel, and all of that is vulnerable to DMCA requests from the rights holders saying that's our stuff, either cough up the cash or take it down. They're all vulnerable to that. And a lot of them, as I said, Prince just refuses to allow his stuff at all. And some of them say just put too high a price on it and say, look, to license this tune, it's you either cough up a lot of cash or you choose something else. So again, would you choose not to promote yourself in that way? No, hell not. You would do it anyway. So this is again, you're forced essentially into breaking the law. Because of the laws set up by business people supposedly to help musicians and artists. So as a musician, you're forced into breaking the law to get around that. Either that or coughing up lots of cash. So again, to labour a point, these rules are supposed to be there to help you, allegedly. So what's the way around? What's the solution to this? Well, Creative Commons answers a lot of that, because the thinking on copyright is that you should be paid for every single instance of it. Every time someone listens, you should be paid for it. Creative Commons is a solution to that. Is it? What it does is take going back to the introduction phase, where we're all trying to get to know each other and getting to know our own levels. And if I'm saying, right, have you heard, I mean, imagine all these songs are going a different, go back and into a different timeline. Imagine all these recognized household names are all Creative Commons. So if I'm saying, right, I want to do Dreamer's Ball by Queen, and the guys say, well, I know Queen but never heard that tune, well, I can say, right, that's cool. I'll send you an MP3, or I can put an MP3 up on a torrent somewhere, or up on a like RapidShare or something, and say, right, there's the link. Go check it out. Or I can, if I have a video or something, I can put it up on YouTube, knowing that it won't be. I'm not breaking any laws. It's all attributed back to Queen and the writers, which I believe would be Freddie Mercury. Brian May might have had a hand in it, offhand. So there wouldn't be breaking any laws, and we could have all this conversation. All of us could be firing links back and forth, and saying, right, have you checked this out? We could do this tune by this band, and how about this one? Oh, I quite like the guitar part in that, but you know. So that whole discussion could be done easily No problem at all without breaking any laws. And then we get to the stage where we're getting together and we're listening to it from the musician's ear and starting analysing the tune. Well, we can hear all different variants. We can explore different, like a jazz version of this tune or a brass band version of a tune or something, because it's all Creative Commons. It's all legally shared with derivatives and improving on other versions, and we'd be part of that if, optimistically, if we can listen to a tune and disseminate it and put it through the filter that is us, the chemistry that's us, and then record it. And again, when we're burning these CDs, again, there's nothing that's encouraged to be shared. Creative Commons is about being shared. So we wouldn't be breaking the law there either. As far as derivatives of the work, I would assume that transcribing a Creative Commons tune, I don't know offhand, I'm not a lawyer, I would assume transcribing that tune would be perfectly legal as well. So we could we wouldn't be breaking the law by getting transcriptions of the tunes that we want to do, and then photocopying that so that we can all learn it and we can all improve on it. And again, if we wanted to put our own transcriptions up of the way that we do it, again, that would be perfectly legal. It would be encouraged, in fact, under the Creative Commons, because it helps spread and improve a derivative of the tunes that are already there. We wouldn't have any problems with any of the recordings we put up on YouTube. If we put our entire gig up on YouTube, every time we play a gig, we record it on audio and video and set up a YouTube channel, a Vimeo channel, Blip TV, whatever you want. Put our music out on torrents, put them out on RapidShare and all of that. Then we're helping spread the word, essentially, and we're not breaking any laws. We can do all that and do it all Creative Commons. And for people wondering, well, where does that get the original writers of these songs? What do they get out of it? Well, they get increased listeners, increased viewers, increased audience. People are going to share songs anyway. If you're good enough, people are going to want to share this song that they've heard with other people. And Creative Commons lets them do that legally. So what do the original artists get out of it? Well, they get a bigger audience when they're playing in various gigs. They've got a bigger number of people are aware of them, and will happily go and compensate them and go to the gigs, and that's where they make their money. It's the bigger audience, bigger sort of word of mouth, grassroots fan base, essentially, and people promoting their music free of charge, in forums and in blog posts, mentioning, oh yeah, I went to see them last week when they were in Cardiff and they were brilliant. The guitar solo on such and such was blistering. You should check these guys out. And this is all grassroots promotion, and all of that is by fans who are enthused by what they hear. They want to help promote and reward the artists that do the work. So that is where the original artists benefit. They benefit from ticket sales. They can sell CDs, they can sell DVDs and all that kind of stuff from their websites. They can sell CDs and stuff and USB sticks with their albums on it at the gigs themselves. Sell T-shirts, all that type of stuff. And just because you can download something for free, there's an awful lot of people who say, well, look, all of this money that I give is going directly to the artist. Because what the current sort of copyright thinking is, I mean, Morrissey, a while back, said to his fans, "Look, there's a compilation, a greatest hits compilation coming out from my record label or my former record label. I don't know which, but it's they're doing it against my wishes." They asked, I don't know if they asked him or not, but he objected to it. Partly because he didn't want, it was like a cash in, a Christmas thing, it was like a cash in thing, just to screw more money out of his fans. But the other point was, the royalties, the contract that he was on, the royalties had dried up years before that. So he wasn't receiving a penny from these sales. So he said, "Look, don't buy it. Don't just don't buy it." Now, the even when artists are getting royalties, they're getting pennies per sale. So the Creative Commons way, essentially, that all of that money goes to the artist directly. You're directly contributing, you're directly rewarding the people who are pouring their heart and soul into the music that you listen to and that you enjoy and that you can share and help promote. So there's that. And even the books, the music books, so many of these deals that the artists are on don't cover any ancillary stuff like books. Tab books, I mean, I would imagine, I don't know, but I would imagine the Queen example, I would imagine that the members of Queen, even in their heyday, even when they were at the height of their creative powers and releasing all these albums and playing stadiums all over the world, I would doubt if they ever received a penny from sales of these books. I would imagine that would have been hoovered up by the various publishers and distributors and tucked away into the small print, that Queen would never have received a penny out of these, let alone now. So there's the whole concept of these rules and these laws that need to be extended and locked down and tightened up. All help the artists. It's bullshit. It's absolute bullshit. So that's just an idea. I mean, a lot of people think of it from the perspective of just the listener, the fan, the viewer. So this HPR episode is about imagining it from the musician's point of view, from the creator's point of view, and just how it doesn't work for them, essentially how it screws them as well as the end user, the fan. So this has been a rather long episode and a bit of a monologue. So I apologise for that, and I thank you for listening. My name is Gordon Sinclair. My email address is gordon@thistleweb.co.uk if you want to contact me. I'm available on IRC as well. IRC name is Thistleweb. Again, you'll notice a pattern. And my website, I do screencasts as well, so that's the end of the self-promo thing. And they can be found at my website and my blog, which is thistleweb.co.uk. So, as I said, this has been a long episode, and I thank you for your time. And until next time, goodbye.
Thank you for listening to Hack Republic Radio. HPR is sponsored by Caro.net, so head on over to caro.net for all your hosting needs.